Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Mobile hunters, if you're interested in upping your mobile game, then head to tetherednation.com and check out their saddle gear. There are a few things that you can buy that will actually help you become a better deer hunter or give you the freedom to hunt any tree or any situation. This reason is why I started saddle hunting in the first place and why I use Tethered's gear. I can honestly say that Tethered's saddle gear has changed how I hunt for the better. Big tree, little tree, from the ground, it doesn't matter. I'm untethered by my gear to hunt the best setup for the situation instead of hunting for a tree that my gear can use. My current core setup consists of the Phantom Saddle, Tethered One Sticks, and the Predator platform, and along with an assortment of their accessories. So if you want to up your mobile game, head over to tetherednation.com. If you're like me, you spend a lot of time poring over maps, looking at weather data, all in an effort to help predict when and where my best times are to hunt. It'd be nice if there was a reliable source with all this information in one place. Enter the Spartan Forge app. Unlike some other predictive apps on the market, Spartan Forge was created from military combat intelligence experience tailored for hunters and stands at the nexus of machine learning and whitetail deer hunting. No more man-made algorithms. This is a predictive model based on real GPS collared deer data, historical and predictive weather, and the next level of mapping imagery. All at my fingertips. I've had an opportunity to use the desktop version of Spartan Forge last year and recently the beta version of the iOS app, and it has replaced all of my other mapping tools. Head over to SpartanForgeAI.com to sign up today to get your place in line as the mobile app launches soon. This podcast is brought to you by Skull Brew Coffee Company. Skull Brew Coffee roasts premium single origin coffee, guaranteeing to deliver the freshest coffee directly to your doorstep. The kicker? They're 2% for conservation certified and donate 10% of their proceeds back to organizations who support the interests of our hunting community. So go to skullbrewcoffee.com and pick up one of their 3 killer roasts and fuel your hunt and fill more tags with Skull Brew Coffee. Welcome to the Truth from the Stand Deer Hunting Podcast brought to you by Skull Brew Coffee Company. I'm your host, Clint Campbell, and you're listening to episode number 253. Today, I'm joined by my buddy Jake Hofer, covering his favorite time of year, Scrape Week. So stay tuned. All right. What is up, everyone? Happy Wednesday to you. Hope you're doing well. Hope you are feeling fine. It is here. The game has begun. It is, as I mentioned in the intro from my buddy Jake Hofer, it is Scrape Week, which has quickly become one of my favorite weeks to hunt. I used to be more of a beginning of November guy, which I still love that time of year. You know, we refer to it as Sweet November for a reason. But this week is that week where if you have some intel on a buck and he's been kind of frequenting some scrapes, so to speak, or you're in his wheelhouse, maybe is one way to say it. Knowing that and having that kind of annual data on scrapes this time of year and this week specifically, it can be a killer and go a long way to filling your tag. And so much so, I don't think I mentioned this on the last podcast because I put this together over the weekends and then I hunted during the week a little bit, but I had similar intel. And my favorite time period is actually that kind of like 15th through the 20th. I really like that time period. That's just been historically some places where I run cameras where I see the first kind of daylight sighting of the bigger deer that are in the area, so to speak. Doesn't necessarily always mean that the biggest deer hit that scrape or whatever the case is, but it's been consistent now that window, and it happens different times in different places. There's one place, and Jake and I talk about it a little bit in this session, but it's around the 18th on one spot. And so I hunted the 18th and had an encounter with, there are two deer that were hitting this particular scrape over the course of, you know, fall, I guess late summer into early fall, that were, you know, kind of told me that they were going to be around, and that held true. And so that 18th kind of date, as long as I had the right wind, that was whenever I saw a flurry of kind of daylight activity, in years past. And so I made plans to be there and was there. And I ended up seeing $4, and one was one of the shooters that I was wanting to try to get an arrow in. Had him at 20 yards and just could not get a shot off. So it's happened to me twice now this year to where I've had shooter bucks, you know, target bucks within bow range and just couldn't pull a shot off. This one came in, slipped in kind of quiet. I couldn't really see him real well at first, so I was having a hard time kind of discerning which buck it was. And then by the time I realized which buck it was, I had kind of run out of time in terms of getting drawn because he was passing the last little bit of cover. And, you know, shame on me. It's like I should have just drawn and been ready. But I wasn't real sure. There's a couple different deer that have a similar kind of frame, I guess, if you will. One's a big eight that kind of has a non-symmetrical side. Another one's a really big eight that's kind of wide and just like perfectly symmetrical. And then there's another eight that looks exactly like that wide one, only he's clearly younger and he has just shorter tine length. And so I couldn't discern if it was him or if it was the longer tine length eight. And it was, of course, the longer tine length eight point. So when he kind of crossed that last little bit of brush where I would have had an opportunity to shoot, he was actually head up on me as well. So even if I would have gotten drawn, probably not a high likelihood that I would have gotten a shot opportunity anyway, just by the way he was positioned and kind of coming in. But there were some lessons learned on that hunt, watching bucks kind of come in into that scrape, because they kind of had me fooled based on camera intel, because I wasn't running anything on video. And so how I thought they were entering the scrape is not exactly how they were entering the scrape. So have to tweak my setup. Probably get one more hunt in there possibly this week, as I'll have the right wind. Unfortunately, over the 30th, 29th and 30th, I think Friday and Saturday, going to have the complete wrong wind for that, unfortunately. So going to try to get a hunt in the middle of the week and capitalize on having the correct wind. But with that, we're going to go ahead and get moved into today's show. Two quick things for you before we jump in. Head over to skullbrewcoffee.com and pick yourself up some coffee. Don't suffer shitty coffee on your travel hunts. We have cool killer pour over packs, so you have baller coffee in the mornings for your travel hunts. We also have regular coffee as well. You can use the promo code TFTS21. Save yourself some cash on that. And then head to truthfromthestand.com and go to the merch tab. Pick yourself up some dope truth merch. Again, TFTS21 promo code. Save yourself some cash on that as well. Have a killer show for you guys today. Have my good buddy Jake Hofer on. Jake is, of course, one of the owners of Exodus. He kind of handles all the marketing and sales over on the Exodus side of things. I've known Jake for a while. Jake is one of those guys, and I kind of mentioned in the podcast, I refer to as a quiet or unassuming killer. He just seems to, Chad and I kind of have a running joke to where it's like, if you need a big deer killed within our group of friends, within our crew, probably need to call Jake to do it. Cause it seems like every year you get into November, if it doesn't happen this week, his favorite time of year is scrape week. You get into November and you can almost be certain you're going to get a text message with a slob that Jake has put on the ground. He's just kind of made a habit of it. And deer has been something that's been in his life, for forever. I'm hard pressed to find a bigger deer nut than Jake. And so I really just enjoyed this conversation. We also talk a little bit about the demonetization of YouTube, like the things that happened a couple weeks ago with a couple YouTube channels that scare. We kind of talk about that a little bit. And then of course, Jake's love for scrapes. Jake is one of those guys that, you know, I've always kind of appreciated scrapes. And it wasn't really until I started talking with Jake a lot at trade shows and stuff like that, when I would go work at the Exodus booth or John Eberhardt, where I really started understanding how to hunt them and the time frames in which they can become a critical kind of strategy, or it can become kind of like the backbone of a strategy for some really good hunts. So with that, and also I'll just say annual data as well around scrapes. Like, he is one of the guys that I kind of picked that up from and have paid close attention to, and it's been paying dividends where it's putting me in position to have some really good encounters the past couple of years. So without further ado, we'll go ahead and get jumped into today's podcast. And as always, I want to thank you all for listening. All right, folks, welcome back to another episode of the Truth From the Stand Deer Hunting Podcast. And today, I got to say, man, admittedly, I'm a little embarrassed that it has taken me this long to have you on. I have my good buddy Jake Hofer from Exodus Outdoor Gear on the line with me. What's going on, brother?
Not too much. It's I like these early morning podcasts because I'm fresh and undistracted. So thanks for having me on here. I'm really excited. I've listened to your podcast on and off for a really long time, and I've learned a lot and got a lot of value from it. So hopefully I can pass that forward. We'll see.
Well, I'm sure you will. And I appreciate that, man. It's like you're all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to go. I got up, got a workout in it. I'm still literally sweating from the workout. Like I grabbed a shower, yep. but like I haven't kind of wore off like the post workout sweat yet. So
yep.
if I look moist on this end, that's that's why. And that's a gross word too, moist. It's just
some people do not like that.
No, I think it's held in high regard for certain things. I think looking at a friend is maybe not one of those. You know?
Hey Clint, you're looking real moist over
there. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Oh man, I think we should probably pivot from that before we go down hard pivot. But what have you been up to, man? I know you always stay super busy, you know, and I'm guessing, you know, that hasn't changed for you. You always have your hands in a lot of different things. So what have you been up to?
A lot of things, actually. I just actually finished up moving. Actually, today would be 3 weeks from when I just moved. So that always, I was over optimistic of how little of a work that would actually take. And I was like, oh, we'll just move on on an evening after work, and that morning we'll be no.
Yeah, no.
And then so I've been just got settled in here, or starting to get settled in. I'm in the basement right now. I'm redoing my remodeling my office right now. That will be my office. And scrape week's rolling in. Exodus is in full swing, humming along. It's been an awesome year, despite some of the logistics and supply chain issues that everyone's aware of. But it's been really awesome to see the brand grow. I don't want to say mature because we're still very young. This is our sixth year in business, but just from what year three to year six has happened, has me really excited for the future too. And then real estate's been really busy as well. So it's just been honestly just a banner year up to this point. And I have so much to be thankful for.
Nice. Yeah. And hopefully you keep that ball rolling into the whitetail woods as well, you know?
I hope so, man. It won't be from lack of trying if it doesn't happen. But
right. Well, I keep busting Chad's chops. You know, I was like, dude, I was like, you have to count on Cameron and Jake to kill all the deer around there, man. He's like, I know. He was like, they're the killers, dude. They're the killers of the bunch. You know, and like that's the thing. Like you're very unassuming, man. And like I've talked to him about that, not on the podcast, just like offline. I was like, Jake is like one of the better hunters that I know. I was like, he gets it done consistently, and you have a method. You know what I mean? It kind of leads to that consistency, you know?
Yeah.
And like, we're definitely going to dive into that, but as like, he's always very unassuming. I was like, but he's that quiet lurker that's always just picking up the information as people are talking. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, end of October shows up and Jake's got a slob on the ground.
I think I take a lot of the conversations for granted, like some of the people that we actually get to talk to and run like personal scenarios by. And I think sometimes that complicates my thought process in terms of, because you have like all these conflicting principles of like, what should I do? But it's been, I've learned a lot in the last 3 or 4 years, which has me even more excited for, you know, the upcoming years and future as well.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. It's like, you have to get to a point to where you start to trim the fat a little bit. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of contextualize, you know,
what's my method? What's my style that works for me?
Yeah. What can I adopt? Cause there might be something you hear that's really, really smart. And you're like, oh man, that's a really smart, really good idea. But it might be one of those things where just my personality, like I don't have the patience to execute it, you know? Yeah. And so then therefore it's not a really good option for me, because even though it will work under the right circumstances, I don't have the right makeup, you know, or the patience or whatever it is. It's like someone who, you know, wants to start beast hunting, but they don't want to go walk for miles to find sign or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a great principle. It's a great approach. Mm-hmm. But if you're not a grinder type of person, it's probably not for you. You know what I mean? Whereas the person who is a grinder type person, you know, running a bunch of trail cameras and relying on a bunch of, you know, annual data may not be the best approach for them. They could be successful if they could. Right. Mm-hmm. But their personality just may not allow them to be patient enough to do that, you know, and they get frustrated and don't enjoy it or whatever.
That's the key thing. Yeah. I think you got to figure out what you actually enjoy and it's all about longevity. What can you do and, you know, really enjoy? Otherwise you're going to start making, you know, poor decisions.
Yeah. So with that, man, I know you're a first time offender on this podcast. Yeah. So I always like to kind of just make sure everyone is aware of, you know, who the person is on the other end and what they do for a living. So if you wouldn't mind just a little bit about you and, you know, what you do for a living in the whitetail world.
Yeah, my name is Jake Hofer. I'm from Illinois. One of the co-owners of Exodus, handle a lot of the marketing for Exodus and brand direction, and kind of oversee all the content. And then I'm also a licensed broker in the state of Illinois. So the two have kind of tandem together, and I've really super lucky to be able to do what I do for a living, and also thoroughly enjoy Whitetails 365.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I don't, you know, and knowing you, man, it's like luck had, I would say, nothing to do with it. You're like one of the most prepared people I know. And everything you do is very thoughtful. So the fact that you're having success, not just with Exodus, but outside of that, is not a big surprise. But what was the thing that kind of got you? I know the thing, like whenever I saw you were getting into the land stuff, like I wasn't surprised, because mm-hmm. I was like, this is a natural kind of evolution. Like in my mind, I was like, he's already in the whitetail world, and you were even growing up, you know, to a degree. And then the Exodus thing happens, you know, and you're very familiar with the area that you live for a bunch of mm-hmm. reasons. One is, you know, because you've grown up there. But yep. two, like, you're just very aware of the habitat, the surroundings, and, like, what the neighborhood looks like whenever you're yeah. hunting. Like, that's a big thing for you. It's not just, like, the micro of the property. It's the macro of, like, what else is going on around me. And that's how you would approach hunting. And so whenever I saw you were getting into land, I was like, that's not a far stretch. I was like, because yeah. the dude actually is on point with basically everything that's around him already. And who better to sell, you know, yeah. or sell or buy from than yeah. a person like that who really has their pulse on things. So what was that like getting into that? What was the final kind of like catalyst, I guess?
I got my license actually my senior year of college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, it was still the same thing. I realized I always have a lot of stuff going on, because then I was writing articles for Wide Open Spaces to basically pay my rent. I was selling deer pee to help pay for college. And then I was like, I'm just gonna get my real estate license. And then so I went through the course. Yeah, I went through the coursework, and I failed it twice. I failed the test twice because I had all these other things on. I had a heavy level of coursework, and I took my, you know, studies very seriously. And then I buckled down. I said, okay, it's time to like really study. I read the real estate, you know, handbook that if I would have read the first time, I would have passed it the first time, but I had to do it my way.
Right.
And then, so I got my license, and I really didn't do too much. Obviously I was, you know, 22 years old, did not do too many transactions the first, you know, maybe one or two a year. And then really the last 2 years, moved back to where I was growing up, and it's just been really busy. And I guess that evolution has just been, talking when you're in it every single day, and you're talking to, you know, customers of Exodus, or you're talking to people that are, you know, reaching out, and, you know, whatever the case may be, it's like that deal flow is just so natural and unforced. And that's where it's just kind of, it's really taken a course of its own. And I think that I plan on having my license for my entire life. So that's the approach that I have of, it's like, I want to do everything the right way. I don't want anyone to, you know, say I'm a slime ball or anything like that. And, you know, do things the right way. You know,
right. You're playing the long game.
Exactly. Yeah. I plan on living here, and I do not want to be the hermit that's like, can't go to public because they're like, hey, you
know? That guy sold me a lemon, you know? Yeah.
Yeah,
you don't exactly. want to be the town used car salesman for sure.
No, not at all. And so it's just been really good. And it's like one deal leads to another. And then, you know, like it's just kind of, it's just naturally happened. I don't know. It's naturally to me, but it's been a lot of work too. It just does not happen overnight at all.
Right. And any good thing is it's built on a good, and you're building it on a good foundation. I'm just curious, you know, how much, you know, did Exodus and just like some of the visibility that you have through the company in general, was that, I mean, I'm sure that was helpful from a standpoint of like,
sure.
you were already part of a reputable company. They mm-hmm. knew your face maybe from that. So there was like a level of comfort. People had work, you know, reaching out to you because of that.
For sure. Yeah. There's been some of that. And then it's like some people, it's almost taboo in the real estate world to say you have another job. And
oh, wow.
so it's like,
okay.
there's other times where it's like, you have to read the person. Like if they're a diehard whitetail person, happy to divulge that. And most of the time they know of Exodus, or they're at least familiar with the name. And there's other times where, you know, someone that I just don't think that they'll have a clue, like anything about Exodus. And I don't mention it because there's like this stigma. It's like, okay, well, if you're doing this like full time, quote unquote, then like, how do you have another job and vice versa? And reality of it is it's nights and weekends, because that's when people are available to look
that's
at properties
it.
And
yeah.
talk about them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So before we jump into hunting specific stuff, you know, we were talking just before we started recording, you know, we have a pretty tight knit group of friends, so to speak, you know, and mm-hmm. I work in marketing and advertising, and you're one of my buddies who's in the outdoor space, who also obviously works in marketing and advertising. So few folks I get the nerd out with when it comes
yeah.
to, you know, business and marketing stuff. And we, of course, and I wanted to talk to you really bad whenever this all kind of happened, you know, and just, you know, unfortunately mm-hmm. we were trying to schedule and get this on, but, you know, we had the whole demonetization YouTube kind of fiasco that happened however many kind of weeks ago. And it seems like for now, at least, everything has been kind of, the ships have been righted to a degree.
Yeah.
At least it's what I've kind of seen on social media or whatever the case is. What was, I have a kind of point of view on it, but what was your, what's your point of view on the whole demonetization scare, where you think things are headed? What, how do you safeguard yourself against those things if you're a brand that that's what you rely on?
Yeah, I'll break that down. So I guess the first thing of where do I think, or what did I think of it? Well, we've seen that in the gun space. It happened with the gun space earlier. And a lot of those people just started a brand new channel that was, that had no guns. They still kept their gun channel. And like, it was a form of still like their top of their funnel to get people to their new, more monetized channel, because yeah, they would still put content there, but they would not make, you know, necessarily any money at all. And then they started fresh, and maybe since they already had a big audience, they pivoted. And so that was my first thought. I was like, well, for hunting, that would be a little bit more challenging, I think. And then, you know, where do I think it's going? I don't know. I mean, I would hate to bet against YouTube, honestly. Like, you have the Google backing. It's like one of the largest companies in the world. Now, the hunting in the scope of YouTube and in the scope of Google is like literally a speck of sand.
Nothing.
Like, it's they could squash that. Like, they could eliminate all that and they would not even feel any.
It would not even show up on their bottom line.
Well, and I think that, and then again, I was like, well, you know, it seems like all these other companies are just now figuring out YouTube. And like, I see a lot of ads from the outdoor space that are actually getting ran on some of these channels, which is interesting. But I'm still like very bullish on YouTube, and I don't think anything's going to happen. But now, as a creator, like a pure, like for us, we have a channel, we put out a ton of content. We have a great team that does a lot. Like, we would not be able to do it without the team we have in place, but it's also, we have a product, like we're a product first company.
Right.
Like, we're all about educating, but we're not making money. Like, we're not paying the bills with a YouTube ad revenue.
Right. So, right.
Now, like someone like, you know, some of these other creators, I would be building up my email list like no other. And I think that's kind of happened. I mean, I've seen Seek One started a e-course, which has been in the process for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then you look at, I think THP just started a course as well. Mm-hmm. And so you see those kind of pivots. And then the other question of it is too, it's like with other like network television, you had to pay to get on there.
Right.
And then you sold those spots. And like, here's YouTube, not free distribution. They pay you to distribute.
Right.
And then you get the most eyeballs. Like, to me, even if they took away the ad revenue, like it's all about like the top funnel, like deal flow, like you're getting eyeballs and you don't have to pay for the distribution. Like, go on the Pursuit channel and drop 20 grand. Like,
yeah,
that's so antiquated. Like, so to me, I'm sure it was a scare, and I'm so glad our business model is not based on that. But if I were someone in that position, I'd be taking a real hard look of like, how do we diversify? How do we bump our merch game up? How do we produce a product that people would like? You know, cause those channels are businesses. Like,
that's
not,
well, that's just it. That's the part that would like make me nervous. You know, if I were them, the handful of them that's their business model, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've mentioned on the podcast before, like my background is I'm a digital strategist. That's what I do for a living. Right. And so it's all about the ecosystem and what you have kind of set up. And like, that was you and I have texted back and forth before about like, dude, the email list is king. Like if you don't
always
have that,
been.
Yeah, it always will be. I mean, that's like those are your hand raisers that you can rely on that'll support you, whether it's a product or viewing something or listening to something or whatever the case is. I certainly think, you know, same as you, if you're a product company and that's kind of what you're built on, then I think you have a little less to worry about, because YouTube is an aspect of how you get eyeballs to your, ultimately to your product. And the revenue from YouTube kind of offsets like the content creation, production costs and stuff like that. You know,
some travel costs, some manpower. Yeah. And that's great. It's wonderful. But if that went away, we would still be doing the same thing.
Right. Like, right. Because it's feeding a larger beast. You know what
exactly.
I mean? The ones that are just straight creators as a business, those are the ones that I get concerned for. Because they have to pivot and turn into a product company at some point. Right. And then, well, what is that product, right? Like, there's only so many like e-courses and stuff like that you're gonna,
it's
that
hard
people are gonna buy. Yeah, exactly. It's hard. It's like, if you're going to go into like a manufacturing thing, that's a whole different kind of avenue. And do you have the skill set to do it? Do you have the capital to put up to like to launch it, get it off the ground? Do you have the capital to bring in the right talent or resources if you don't innately have those skill sets to do that with you? You know what I mean? It's like, so it becomes a whole different thing. And I started thinking about, if you wanted to keep just the content aspect of it, you have to start then thinking about it as like you know, no longer is it, are you going to be a successful, I mean, you can now, but if YouTube were to say, yeah, we're not doing, we're demonetizing all hunting or whatever, mm-hmm. you would have to then kind of think about if you were still going to have your content be your product. It's like, you now have to create the ecosystem that, to your point, it's like where YouTube is like still your quick hits and bits and information. And then there's a premium content section that is behind a paywall of some sort that you, mm-hmm. that you would use YouTube to get people to. Right. And it becomes like, you know, Seek One, because they're the ones that this was the most obvious that it happened to. It's like, okay, you have the YouTube channel, which is your feeder. And then you probably have like a website or an app or something like that where your premium content is. And then you probably need to start a podcast as well.
Yeah.
And you probably need to, like, so you have to kind of create this ecosystem around mm-hmm. you now. And it has to be an omni-channel kind of orchestrated messaging kind of approach to where you have a clear digital strategy and a clear content strategy for each one of those channels, because they're each pulling different levers for you. And I was Absolutely. Like, that is regular product businesses that have relatively good budgets still struggle with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was like, cause it's not easy. You know, it's easy to write, to whiteboard out and map out, but to execute it, that's the hard part.
100%. And yeah, I think, and I'm curious, I don't know how well the paywall video stuff would work. Cause you look at,
I don't know either. Yeah.
Because you look at some of these, I was talking to a friend about this, and like some of these larger podcasts, and you look at how many Patreon signups they have, like, I assume they're getting 5,000 to 7,000 downloads per episode, you know, right. larger podcast. And they have 40 Patreons.
Yeah.
So clearly people, you know, like, so like that percentage is extremely low. And now that would be my concern. I guess my whole thought would be like, email list is king, and
yeah,
pivot. Cause that's, I mean, the internet has only changed. It's only going to keep changing. So
exactly.
Don't be surprised when YouTube, you know, like, I don't think YouTube's going to go away here in the next like 4 or 5 years, but in the next 15 years, we're probably going to be talking about something completely different.
That's just it. Yeah. Yeah. Or it's YouTube just 2.0, you know what I mean? Or whatever it is where it's like they just changed the platform. Because I mean, if you pay close attention, you can see platforms do that, because they start incentivizing behavior, you know, and it's just like the way Facebook did. At first, it was just text. Well, they wanted to move to imagery, right? And so they started, the algorithm changed to where they prioritized surfacing anyone who posted an image with text. And then when video became the next thing, the algorithm changed, and they prioritized and gave more reach to anyone who was posting video content versus image and text or just text. And so these platforms, if you pay attention, you start to see like whenever certain things become, you know, the, like all of a sudden your numbers jump. You're like, well, why'd your numbers jump? Well, take a look at your content.
Yeah.
Like, or like the type of medium you're using, like, did that change? And if that changed, there's probably a pretty good chance that they're looking for you to do something specific, and they're going to, you know, subtly incentivize you to do it by giving you that dopamine drip of more numbers. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, but yeah, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. We can go down that rabbit hole for forever. But
yeah,
anyway, let's do another hard transition here, man, to hunting. So, you know, we'll get to scrapes and stuff here in a second, but just in general, man, how is your summer inventory in general? And then what are your prospects looking like after the shift and transition and all that stuff?
Summer inventory was a little bit delayed. I had about 25% of my cameras out in comparison to years prior. And I would say the month of July and like the first 2 weeks of August. So kind of just absolutely slammed, like just so busy. And I hate to say that because it's all about priority. Well, summer inventory was not a top priority because I had other things going on. And so I deployed all of them, I think by the second week of August, found some really solid bucks in velvet on some smaller parcels. And then, you know, like rolling in here, it's October 15th right now. It's weird. I was just talking about this. I don't think I have as many like top tier like prospects in comparison to like the last 4 years. Now, we'll talk about during scrape week, but that usually changes in about 10 days.
Right.
But no, I have some bucks to hunt, and I'm super happy. I don't have like I'm not obsessed over a deer right now. There's two deer that I will be obsessed about as soon as I get a picture of them. I know they're alive, but for me, it's like, I'm not burning that mental bandwidth until I feel like I really need to. But I have nothing to complain about. I mean, things are good. Things are solid. There's some good bucks to chase. I noticed a lot of deer didn't necessarily make like as much of a jump as I would thought or anticipated. Mm-hmm. There's two deer that come to mind that like almost look identical from 4 to 5.
Okay.
So That's kind of what I've seen. And there's two deer that I know that did make really big jumps, but overall, I'd say like growth felt a little bit below average.
Right. Now, those two that you said you won't be excited about until they show up here potentially in like the next 10 days or so, is that pretty standard for those deer specifically, that you typically don't see them much until you start to get a little, you know, a little later in the year, so to speak?
Well, one's without saying too much, one of them is I have a new farm that I have access to that I think where I know that deer has summered past, just local hearsay.
Yeah.
And I know my gut feeling says that he'll probably show up on a scrape here, like in the next hope. And if he doesn't show up the next 10 or 12 days on that farm, I'm mentally kind of writing him off.
Right. Yeah.
Cause I think that's, if he doesn't show up then it's just not going to happen. Now I got access to that farm later in the summer. So like, ideally I would have hopefully got a velvet picture of him, but that didn't happen. And then this other deer showed up in velvet. I have no clue who he is. He was in a bachelor group and he was caught your attention.
Yeah.
Yes. And so he was in the bachelor group, I want to say one night. It was very weird. And it's very strange because for whatever reason, I had a cell camera there and it was like a old food plot from last year. And a lot of it came back volunteer this summer and the deer were just absolutely demolishing it. I mean, it was drawing deer from all over the place and there was a super solid bachelor group. My gut feeling is he'll show back up during the rut or at least hopefully here pretty soon. And I don't know. It's that October 24th, 25th. It's like a lot of those deer, like the historical data, I think is most eerie during that time of year, in my opinion. But yeah, those are the two deer. I don't know for sure what's going to happen, but you best believe I have every feeler idea and thought in place here because I do not want to screw up the opportunity if they're there.
Yeah, no, that's a good approach, man. Not burning the mental bandwidth on things that you can't control quite yet at the moment. You know what I mean? Because I've tried to do a better job of that this year where I did hunt some early in the year. My season comes in like mid-September, so I did get out a little bit. A morning here or there when we had like a nice temperature drop or whatever, whenever I saw some cell cameras start to pop of just bucks traveling, kind of catching them as they're transitioning or as they've kind of shifted their ranges or whatever, seeing a couple new guys or whatever, so to speak, and thinking, all right, I think I know where they're bedded. They're using this particular area. It's really, really easy access as far as low profile. It's basically a kayak spot, you know, so I can basically go in and I walk 10 yards and I'm in a tree type of thing, you know, so it's like it's low impact, so I can hunt that a lot, you know, if I wanted to. And so I did a couple morning hunts there, you know, but I have I shared some stuff with you. There's a couple that I have my eye on, you know, that I've been kind of watching. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And I've just, in years past, I probably would have went in like my underwear on fire trying to kill, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But this year, especially, it's made it a little easier because the weather, especially this past week, hasn't been great. You know, it's been a little warm. And so I've managed to be patient this year and I've not been in. I did one hunt when I knew that particular deer was kind of in the area and I knew kind of what wind he liked and we were getting a switch to that wind like that day. So I actually went in it on an evening and hunted him on, you know, that particular day. But I really went in and hunted him because I needed to map out new access. And I was like, all right, I need to go in daylight. I mean, I'm familiar with the area because I've hunted it before. But I was like, the way that deer is moving, the way I'm seeing him, you know, I started, and we'll talk about video in a second, and that was something I picked up more specifically from you. Mm-hmm. It helped me understand how he was accessing this scrape, essentially. And based on what I was seeing on that, I was like, if I use the same access I'm using, I was like, I don't know that it's going to be good for me, you know? And so I was like, I might need to change some things up. I actually talked to our buddy Greg Litzinger about it. We actually got on a map together and looked at it and was like, you know, trying to think about where he's might be bedded and what my access needs to be. And so I actually just went in and mapped out my access. And that hunt was like, I was like, there's a 30% chance I'll kill him on this hunt potentially, but I need to know how I'm getting in and out of here. That way I'm not bumbling around whenever it's, when it's go time, you know? And so that was really what that was for, you know, is to map that out. So, you know, are you a morning, you know, for October, you know, and I know you like scrapes. Are you a morning guy, an evening guy, or just like, I ain't getting out of bed unless like I have something super consistent?
So I this year I've transitioned into, I've always been a morning person. And then there was a stint where I was more of a night owl, and now I'm back to being a morning person. So I get up at 4:45 every day now. Mm-hmm. And part of that's just from being busy.
So right.
You got more stuff to get done. Just wake up earlier. And so from a hunting perspective, I don't typically, like, the month of October, I really don't hunt that many mornings in October. Here in Illinois, it's like larger ag fields, and I feel like access is really challenging. Last year, the first morning I hunted was October 20th, and I did have an opportunity with a buck that I wanted to try to shoot. It was 80 yards and just didn't happen. Mm-hmm. I haven't even hunted yet this year. It's October 15th.
Really?
Tonight's going to be the first night.
Oh, is it really? Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's kind of where I'm at in terms of, like, more, I guess, the end or, like, later part of October, early part of November. Like, then I'm hunting a lot in the mornings.
Right.
If permitted, and I have a good feeling that it's, you know, worth the risk. But honestly, it's hard. Like, access in the morning, I feel, is really challenging with a lot of the farms that I hunt. I don't have, like, that bulletproof access on a lot of the ones I spend a lot of time with. So
yeah,
I always, like, and I've lit, like, same thing, like, listening to other people, like, well, they wait till daylight and they slowly go in. That just feels like everything against I've ever been taught.
I know, man. It's like, I'm the same way, but I'll be honest with you. Like, I started using that more so because of freelance hunting a lot, like, to where it's like, I just can't go in the dark. I'll have no clue where I'm ending up, you know?
Yeah. And so, especially then.
Yeah. And so for that reason, I just started getting a lot more comfortable with it. And the other thing is too, is like, if I know where I think deer are supposed to be, getting in either before they get there or getting in after they get there, either is fine, 'cause I'll either kill them on the way in or I'll get the opportunity to kill them when they're on the way out. You know, so true. I just need to, the priority for me is just being in there without them knowing that I'm in there, regardless of what time I do it, you know, because I'm going to set myself up where I think I'm going to have a shot opportunity regardless, you know? So, but I used to struggle with that too, where I was like, man, it's cracking daylight. I'm not in my tree, you know?
Yeah. Now, you feel like you're late to the party.
Yeah. And what I've realized is, like, a lot of times I wasn't, you know, it's like a lot of times I'd get in my tree and then all of a sudden it'd be like 9 o'clock and a deer comes strolling through, you know what I mean? Where it's like, I've already been in my tree for like 2 hours, 'cause I got in it like at gray light, you know,
snacks all gone.
Snacks are all gone. I already peed once, you know, it's like, yeah. Oh man. But yeah, so I kind of teeter on both. It's like, I'll let the deer kind of dictate. And that's where the cell cameras for me have really kind of come in handy. It's like, you know, this one particular deer that I shared with you, he seems to be way more active in the morning. Like, he's already started cracking, like, gray light. Like, I've gotten pictures of him in the past, probably in the past 7 days, I guess, like, two different times where he was at like 6:58 and 7:04, like, where he's hit a scrape or whatever. So I'm like, and there's a really pretty dense canopy in this area, and I'm like, I probably need like 10 more minutes to have like legit, like, shooting light, like, good shooting, decent shooting light.
Yeah.
So but it's like, to your point, I don't like to hunt mornings typically in October, but I'm like, if this dude's telling me he's a morning guy,
sure,
you know, then
figure out a way if you can. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so man, I want to talk about scrapes, 'cause we've alluded to it a couple times. You know, scrapes are, I know it might be one of your favorite things, not just related to deer, but maybe in the world in general.
It's up there. Top five for sure.
Right. But I want to start, you know, kind of like, where did the fascination with deer start for you? And then ultimately, where did the fascination, like, how did that kind of parlay into scrapes?
Yeah, I was born into an incubator for deer, I think. My family's very deer centric. We had a small deer farm, literally. I think they started basically from my earliest memory as a child. We've had deer forever. So, like, you grow up in that. So I've always just really liked deer. Like, I feel like the weird horse girl. Like, I like deer, you know.
But can't articulate it. I just like deer. Yeah.
I've just always, they're fascinating animals. They're really cool. Something that I've realized here later is, like, how blessed I am to actually have grown up in Illinois. Not to say that I grew up, it's the best place in the world for deer, but it's a really good place.
Solid place. Yeah.
It's not Pennsylvania. It's not Michigan. And I'm aware of that here later. And part of that's traveling around and, like, getting a better perspective. So that's kind of where it's happened. And then I took my studies, like, super serious during school, high school. And so I would hunt, but not to the recklessness of that. Then once post-college is actually when I, like, got really, really into it. And that's super thankful to have been able to start working with Exodus and have a deployment of cameras that I could try to start learning things, because before it's like, you know, I have three or four and you're trying to, you know, do the
trying
most
to piece
work,
a puzzle piece together, like a thousand piece puzzle, but you only got three to start with. Yeah.
And then I think after the first year I was with Access, I maybe had like 10 cameras. A year after that, I had like 17 or 20. And then it's like, wow, okay, now we're cooking a fire and I'm learning a lot. And so I would just, like anyone curious trying to figure things out, scrape, okay, I want to see what bucks are hitting it. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty oblivious to what, like any strategy, like this is, I guess, kind of purely born out of my own curiosity and own data here. And it started happening, like, wow, you know, some people say scrapes are dumb, but like, here's this big buck hitting the scrape in daylight. Mm-hmm. And then it just kept happening. And like, well, okay, well, some of these scrapes are way more productive than other ones. And then that is kind of the evolution of, like, once we started Trail Cam Radio and talking to people and listening to different things, like start piecing, like, so, okay, maybe that is why that's the case. And then I go back and I compare the notes, like, oh yeah, that does make sense in terms of like relation to doe bedding, the amount of mature bucks in an area that may have an overlapping range or maybe like competing for does. What is the deer population in that section? And, you know, like the amount of does, does that make an impact on the amount of bucks that roll in late October? And then it's like a pure numbers game. So like, those are the things that I just started to notice. And then it's like, from the hunting perspective, like, okay, when's the best time to kill one of these big deer? And it's like, well, honestly, probably right around that scrape week. And that's like, that's how we did that. And I think for a lot of people were waiting till November, and someone that listens to your podcast probably isn't waiting until November, but I think a large majority of the population wasn't taking advantage of what I felt was one of the best times to at least have a fun time hunting. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we started Scrape Week, and we went and talked to people who are diehard people and like have experience in that and like breaking down their late October strategy. And that's kind of the birthing of Scrape Week. And it's been so fun. It is, I think, I have an extra like tip to my step there, because it's like, hey, like these are the best card pulls of the year, in my opinion.
Yeah.
During that time here.
It's funny because, you know, from, you know, not just working with you and Chad, but, you know, being friends with you guys, you know, I get the halo effect of the benefit of the data that you guys get, just being mm-hmm. truthful, you know what I mean? Cause I'll talk to you, or I'll talk to Chad, or I'll talk to Cameron, or whatever the case mm-hmm. is. And we're always just like hunting buddies, dudes. Like, we're always swapping information, stories, mm-hmm. what we're seeing and stuff like that. And it wasn't a big surprise. Cause I was just on your podcast on Truck Hammer Radio
yeah.
this week with Chad. Yeah. I'm not sure when exactly that'll come out, but, and we were talking, cause he was like, dude, he's like, you're, trail camera game like this year is like on point. You know, he was like, mm-hmm. you're getting big deer on camera consistently. And it goes back to what you said, where it was, you know, first couple years I had a few cameras and I was learning some stuff, but it's like once I got like an inventory,
it's huge. It's so important.
I started kind of like the trends and like patterns start to pop out at you then, you know, mm-hmm. and you start to see things and like, you know, and it's just you start to be able to qualify scrapes, you know what I mean, more quickly. It's like you can now, yeah. I don't need a trail camera on one necessarily, and I can tell you with pretty good certainty whether or not it's going to be one that's going to be active in daylight or mm-hmm. if it's going to be mainly at night. You know what I mean? Sometimes you still find those ones where I'll just take a flyer on and put a camera on it because I'm like, I'm not sure about this one, you know, and you're like, yeah. and let the data tell you the story, you know. But yeah, and I used to be of that mind where it's, you know, I would wait to kind of like November, and that's whenever I would, you know, hunt scrapes. But the reality was, is like, man, a lot of them are closed up by then, or they become less active, you know?
Yeah.
And so,
well, and you become so much more effective in November by knowing what happened to them right. late October.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so, and I agree with you. It's like, it's one of those things you were talking about. It's hard to, break the habit of getting in before daylight type of thing, right? Going in with yeah. like just a little bit of light. The hard habit for me to break is that I really, really want to start taking my time off that last week of October. You know, because mm-hmm. I feel like that 20th through like the 31st, you know, is like, money. Is the money time to try to kill a big deer, like in and around a scrape, because yeah. you're moving away from being able to bed hunt him at that point, because he's going to get a little bit more active, right? Mm-hmm. And he's going to start to move a little bit more, and he's going to start to check scrapes. So that becomes a time like, well, okay, now, and he's off of food at that point. Like acorns are still kind of at play, but he's now kind of starting to get on a mission of like, I got to start inventorying, right? Mm-hmm. And so at that point, then like the primary kind of destination spots become particularly like those community scrapes, those places that are like outside of doe bedding or outside of like just general like bedding cover or, yep. you know, security cover or whatever the case is. Like they almost replace the destination locations to a degree. Mm-hmm. but I still haven't broke my ties yet with taking my trips in like November sometime.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think that's part of it too, is like hunting a lot of small parcels too. It's like you have a pretty good idea where he's probably bedded. Mm-hmm. Can't hunt it.
Right.
But guess what? You got a freaking giant community scrape, and he's been in there in the summer, and he's let you know that he's alive. And then he shows up maybe like the 15th, 17th, or 18th, or 19th at night. And then you're like, okay, well, this next cold front between the 24th and 27th, 28th, like you need to be in there.
Yeah.
It, from what I've seen with running a ton of cameras.
Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, and that's really when I talk about historical data from my cameras, that's a lot of times what I'm referring to is like the scrape data. You know, because I have one right now that I'm watching where he looks like he might be the same deer from last year. I can't 100% tell. It's near this big community scrape. Last year, he hit it and he started showing up at night like this week, like mid this week. It was around the 12th, 13th-ish, something like that. And he hit it the same time this year. And then he daylighted for the first time last year this coming weekend. So like between like tonight and... Yeah, between tonight and like Monday night, he'll hit it in daylight. I'm almost positive, right? And so I'm kind of watching the weather's going to drop on Monday. So I'm like, man, Monday and evening hunt, like if I were going to pick a day, that would probably be the day. You know, it'll fall within like the 2-day window roughly that he was in the area last year. You know, and so, you know, that to me, that stuff, especially this time of year, becomes like almost invaluable, that type of information.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah. And what you'll hear guys talk about too, like, I know I've talked to Litzinger about this, is he's like, man, that 18th time frame, like 18th to 20th, is like when you usually see big deer hit scrapes for like the first time, like in daylight, you know, where you won't have seen them at all. Like maybe you got velvet, but like they disappear kind of in a lot.
And maybe not even then. Yeah. I've had where like, you don't even get them in velvet there, like on a licking branch. And then it's like, it is almost like clockwork, like the 17th to the 19th, 20th. And then it's like, okay, well they're alive and they're going to be back. And that was something I learned too. Because the old adage is like, scrapes don't mean anything. If they hit a scrape in the middle of the night, there's a 0.1% chance you're going to kill them. And I was like, and I had that adage for a while. And then it's like, my cameras are saying something completely different. Like if they show up, then I'm going to have not necessarily an opportunity to kill them, but they will be working that in the daylight. I would bet almost anything on it.
Well, that rolls into like my next question. So it's like, it's qualifying scrapes. Cause I think that's what we really kind of get to, right? Cause it's like, we all have had and seen scrapes or even hung cameras on scrapes where, you know, we were taking a flyer on one and it was like, they hit it at night, but it really got, if it got daylight activity, it was younger bucks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you know, those are things that are probably out in the open a little bit more. And I would say probably more scrapes of, I almost refer to those as pawings. Like, you know what I mean? A deer just laid something down and he happens to be going by, so I'm going to hit it. But he's not, it's not a destination for him. You know what I mean?
You don't have does communicating with it, really.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, how are you qualifying scrapes when you see them, and how, you know, and how do you maybe like use different scrape setups differently potentially?
Yeah. So some of the better ones I found were in postseason scouting. And so that's one thing. The other one, something I always notice too is, so I guess the first one is, postseason scouting, where it's like you can tell not necessarily like how large the actual scrape is, but like what is the proximity of to that scrape, and then like what's going on in that area. Hopefully you hunted that area before, or you have some sort of knowledge to really piece together. So that's one thing that is somewhat qualifying. And then you can put a camera there in the summer, and if there's deer hitting it, then it's pretty fair to bet it's a community scrape and it's going to be a great opportunity. Now there's another farm that it was literally the only scrape I found on this farm, and it was a community scrape. It was off the edge of bedding, and the same thing, like the majority of velvet bucks were in there, and it was like the scrape week action. And then like, it went dead for a while. And then like around the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, like there were some bucks that filtered back in there. So that's one thing. And then the other thing in terms of qualifying, I think, is the amount of sign that's maybe around it. And it's like finding the scrape amongst many other kind of crappy scrapes that maybe only get hit once or twice. And a lot of it too is just from running 40, 50 cameras on a lot of scrapes too. Right. You just learn. But the one interesting story in terms of like qualifying it. So I went down to the southern part of Illinois, and Tyler and Casey from the Element Podcasters, and then Anthony was there, and I cannot remember the last guy's name, but they picked out the spot. I had nothing to do with actually picking the spot, but we all walked it. And then Casey found a scrape, and I was like, guys, like, this is it. Like, this is, you can kill a giant buck here at the end of October. And they're like, yeah, whatever. Like, you know, I'm usually a pretty positive person, so they're just like thinking, I'm just like talking up an average situation. And then so they put a camera on it, and then sure enough, there's some solid bucks that show up in the summer on in velvet. And then they Tyler called me. He's like, it's October 17th. We have a little bit of a front. I think I'm going to go up there. I was like, no, just wait until the next front. And they ended up first sit. They went there, got like 150-inch eight pointer on the scrape that I called it. Like they were the trigger, man. Like they had so much more to do with it than what I did. But I said, this is the scrape. Like you guys figure out how to kill him. But like, this is it. Like I have no doubt.
He's going to be here. Yeah. You guys figure out how to kill him, but like, he's going to show up.
Yeah. So that was just one where it's like, it's almost like you figure it out after time. Like you can just feel it. And
yeah,
to teach that is get a lot of cameras in front of me.
Yeah. Figure it out. I mean, it's, you know, it's funny, but it's true, right? Like it's one of those things where that's like, you know, the way people use cameras, it's like, you need to use it as a tool, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not like to learn, not a crutch. You know what I mean? It's like, 'cause I think a lot of people, if they get discouraged with using cameras, it's because they kind of rely on them to hunt for them. Whereas mm-hmm. it's really just to kind of help me see the patterns and help me qualify things a little bit better and more quickly. And then, man, I mean, that year over year data is just,
it's huge. It's just
unbelievable. I mean, if you're not a, I'm just going to throw out random, like a Dan Enfalt or at this point, like a Jake Bush, for God's sakes, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Who just kills big deer. That's what Jake Bush does. You know, mm-hmm. if you're not like that in tune with like hunting beds and stuff like that, you can kill bucks in early October because you just
true R form. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, and there's very few people that can do that consistently. You know, I feel the best way to try to at least have good encounters and be in the right places at the right time on good deer is to run cameras year over year in the same spots, especially over scrapes, and get that annual data to know when scrapes are going to turn on, like in mm-hmm. those spots you're hunting prime spots. To me, that is, you know, the, I'll refer to myself as an average hunter. That's the average hunter's way of putting himself in the chips more often. You know what I mean?
100%. Yeah.
You know, 'cause I feel like the other way, I don't have time to spend in the woods 5 days a week, like some people do. And if they do, man, then more power to you. And that's how those guys are killing. Like Jake kills big deer because Jake Bush kills big deer because he just lives in the woods. Like he just
puts in the work. Yeah.
Yeah. He spends more time than anyone I know. Probably he puts more miles on than anyone I know. Probably. And it shows up because he kills giant deer like early in October. You know, well, last year he killed one later, but he had some really good encounters early. But the other part of that is get your annual data from your cameras and make your plans kind of around that. So when you are in the woods, you're setting yourself up for high priority or high opportunity kind of sits essentially. Mm-hmm. So mock scrapes, man. Yay or nay for you. What's your feeling on that?
Mixed opinion.
Mixed opinion. Okay.
Yeah, there's one that I made last year that biggest deer I ever got on camera ever, and it was on a mock scrape. People would laugh. It was a field edge mock scrape, and they're like, okay, a field edge scrape, those are worthless. But the issue was there's not a lot of cover in the area, and it was right next to the thickest cover where I had bumped bucks off that point before.
Right.
And so, and there's usually a resident buck in there. So I put a mock scrape right there, and I got some of the best inventory there last year out of all the scrapes, including regular ones. And that's been a staple now. The camera right over right now, and I'm eager to see what bucks are showing up right now.
Right.
It's just a regular one. I don't have enough signal there. So that's one example of like putting a mock scrape in a very strategic location. Mm-hmm. I do have a stand there. It's a very difficult spot to hunt. And then there's other ones where it's mixed. Like I make mock scrapes. I made one yesterday actually, mm-hmm. and I already had deer hitting it. And it's like, it's just not as good as the community. Like, I feel like you can't create a community scrape. I've tried it. I just have not had it happen. That one from last year is an example. I wouldn't call it a community scrape, but it was a very high traffic one. And
right. Just,
that was from terrain and the lack of cover, but there's thick cover right there. And it's like, check the boxes there. But to me, you cannot beat a community scrape.
Yeah. Period. Yeah. I'm the same. There's nothing like the real thing. You know, that's kind of my kind of opinion. And I've had kind of, varying degrees of success with mock scrapes as well. Right. I've had some, there's one that I set in the Poconos that actually has worked, but it's not getting like hammered. It's
sure.
I've been able to kind of locate a handful of really good bucks that have come through and hit it. It's almost like inventory, you know, mm-hmm. and I put it in a high traffic area that was in some cover. And I knew deer were probably going to funnel through there, and they did. you know, and now I know who's in the area. But as far as like that being a priority for them, I don't know. Sure. I am intrigued because I'm going to kind of use a new, I've often used the Jeff Sturgis process, you know, you know, some type of like Vine, you know, it's kind of been what I've done in the past. And I've used Smokey's Preorbital because Don Higgins uses that. I actually used it before I knew Don did, and I found success with it. And Don kills big deer, and he likes it. So I'm like, you know, he knows what he's talking about.
1 + 1 equals 2.
Exactly. So, but the other thing is, too, is like some of these places, like, you know, that I'm hunting certain areas are big woods. And so, you know, I wanted to talk to someone who hunts the big woods. And I think you guys might even have Troy Pottinger coming up on your podcast as well.
Yeah.
And he has a really unique approach because he's hunting Idaho and like the biggest of woods, you know, with super low deer numbers. Yeah. And that dude just kills the game.
He's the goat.
Legit creating community scrapes. Like he doesn't just create a mock scrape. He creates a mock scrape that becomes a community scrape. Yeah. You know? And so I've actually got some of his secret sauce that he sent me. And I'm actually going to start building mock scrapes using his method and see if I get any type of different reaction.
That's gonna be cool to follow for sure. I think that could be huge, and to find to create a melting pot of bucks in an area with not a lot of defined movement.
Yeah,
that seems like a recipe for success, and he has definitely found plenty of success. The mock scrape I made last night is kind of interesting though. This farm, I have not found a scrape yet. I haven't poked around a ton, but like some locations where like, oh, there should be a scrape there. There's not a scrape. So I made one yesterday. It's in between two bedding areas. There's tons of old rut sign, like old rubs, and I put that mock scrape in there yesterday, and I feel pretty confident that it should be solid given that there's no other scrapes. And like, this is the most lot, like from a textbook perspective, like, okay, buck should be cruising between the two bedding areas. It's, you know, it makes sense. It's like downwind of the north wind for our major food plot. Like it makes sense.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see if it plays out that way.
And it's the only game in town, you know what I mean?
Right, so, now. Yeah. 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 So. And I was like, it's like, is there any bucks out here? Right. This place sucks.
That's usually where there's a giant is what I've ended up finding out. It's because like a lot of these deer that I'm seeing that are hitting some of these scrapes. I mean, dude, I couldn't pay someone to find a rub anywhere. You know, like, and I've walked all over the place. I've seen some small stuff, and it could be just fooling me based on the size of deer that I've seen on camera and like the size, like the rubs I'm seeing, like they're not matching. But sure. I also know from hunting some big woods pieces that often is the case where it's like, you know, I have been in places where I know there's a giant deer because I've seen him on camera multiple times. He's in the area, and then the rubs look like a fork. He made it, you know, it's like, I've seen that, you know? So, last question, because I know we're running up on time here, but I want to get a sense of like, cause this is something I've picked up from you and it's paid huge dividends for me so far at this point, is how you're using cameras over scrapes. And that's essentially like, once I heard the story of how you killed your buck last year from Chad and what you learned from like the camera inventory, which helped you kill that deer, it changed my mind on how I kind of use my cameras over scrapes. Now, so you talk just a little bit about your scrape setups for cameras.
Yeah. So they're all a little bit different. And I would love to say that every one of them is like, you know, elevated and angled perfectly and everything else. But that isn't always the case. I guess what I always do, every single lift two I have is on video mode, and it's not 10 seconds. Most of them are 25 to 30 seconds, which is, it seems like a long time, but when you're watching them, I'm telling you, you get so much more information. I just pulled the card a week and a half ago, I think. And it was a 25 second video, and it wasn't on a scrape, but it was like, I had elevated and like, you get the top two times, like the two G2s for the first like 10 seconds. And then like most people run their cameras for 10 seconds and maybe a 5 to 10 second trigger delay. But then he kept moving on, and I got a perfect look at this deer that I've been waiting to show back up. And it's like, you get so much more with running the extra video. And here's the other thing too. It's only scrape week for 1 week. Like this, we've been waiting for this for so long. Like if you complain about having to watch through long videos, or like, you know, you're concerned about all these other things, it's only like, this is only, you can only make hay for the next 4 weeks. So like, pony up and do it right.
Right. Exactly, man. Well, that's the thing that I took from you. Cause I know last year, like you learned the demeanor from that deer hitting that scrape. Like, and
so I think are you thinking that 10-year-old I shot?
Yeah, that crazy old buck, because he was getting his butt kicked, you would have totally screwed the pooch had you not seen that video on how you worked that deer to kill him.
Yeah, exactly. And that I learned of that deer the year before on a scrape that had two mature bucks. He was one of them that overlapped, and that was the same exact thing. where he showed up around the 25th, 26th at dark. And then he showed up, the only daylight picture I got of him in the year, that season when I started hunting that farm was like the 14th or 15th, he was dogging a doe. But then he hits that scrape, the 26th, and then a larger buck, to my demise, came in and worked that in Halloween. And then they were both MIA, and I'm thinking like, oh, crap. And then I guess the proof in this is that second larger buck showed up around the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. He was in there chasing does and being a dumb buck for like that four-day span. And the same thing with that deer I killed when he was 9, but I killed him the year after. He showed up after in the later part of the rut. So like, it's not always late October. They show up that later part of like the very last few days of October, your opportunity is probably going to be in November from what I've seen. But then the year after, I got videos of him, Never Velvet, showed up October 24th and was just like haggard, looked like got the hell beat out of him. And there was another, one of the largest body deer I've ever got on video right after, looked like Mufasa or something.
Right.
That bottom. And then I ended up having an encounter with him and fawn bleated him in to kill him. And it's just like, you could tell he was, if you would have seen that, like, oh, that's an old grizzled buck, hit him with the meanest grunt you can, he would have probably went the other direction.
Right. Yeah. If you would have tried to extinguish him, as I know that's your,
it was these things. I slid it down.
Okay. Got to give some love to the extinguisher, but yeah, it's, yeah. And I've picked that up from you. Cause like you do such a good job of like getting inventory on scrapes, but not just that. It was like, it's running the video. And that's what I picked up from you. It's like, most all my cameras are usually over scrapes, even in the summer, whenever I'm getting inventory, like looking for licking branches and stuff like that. I will put it in a funnel or like a cut where I have a food source or something like that. But I run a lot of times what I'll do early is I'll run it on regular, just kind of image mode to like qualify the spot, you know, make sure I'm not getting a ton of false triggers. Then the first time I check it, if I'm getting deer on it, you know, then I flip it to video mode. Cause now I want to know how they're entering, exiting. This one deer I have on this scrape, like the thing that I've learned by watching a couple different videos from him is that seems like he's pretty aggressive. Like he comes in and thrashes the licking branch, like gets his antlers all in it, you know, basically peckers up, stands real tall. Like, you know, and there's been a couple deer kind of approach like the scrape while he's been in it. And he just kind of like peckered up, give him a look, you know, and then they just kind of moved off. And then I've also got video of him bedding in it. And so I'm like, I'll have to send it to you, but I'm like, I'm like, this is his. I was like, you know, that's a deer in Pennsylvania that I don't typically call much in PA. Mm-hmm. I was like, I feel like that's a deer that would possibly respond to light tine tickling. Wouldn't crack him like I'm in Texas, but I was like, he's giving me all the body postures to tell me that he feels like he's dominant. Even if he might not be the oldest deer in the woods, he feels like he's the boss.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. If you're not running video on your cameras during this time of year, you're missing out on so much. It's funny. One of the neighbors I hunt, we've been fantastic neighbor, very open communication, like full open communication, at least on my end. And I'm sending these videos of deer that he has like crappy nighttime pictures of like on a field edge. And he's like, it looks like a good buck, you know? And it's like, and I sent him the video. It's like, oh wow. I didn't know he had a sticker there. He had forked brow tines. It's like, exactly. Beyond demeanor, you can really tell what
characteristic
that deer,
yeah exactly yeah. as a term
is that G2 really 7 inches or is it 10 inches, and like you can really get a better idea.
Well man, I know we're up on time, dude. I actually gotta jump into a work meeting, but before we go, let folks know where they can find out more about you, where they can follow all the different things you've got going on, where they can tune in to the new land podcast that you have going on, all that fun stuff.
So you can find me on Instagram at just Jake Hofer. And you can find everything with Exodus at exodusoutdoorgear.com. We now have three podcasts for Exodus. We have Trocam Radio, which Chad and I host, I guess you'd say, on Tuesdays. I started a new project called the Land Podcast, and that goes live on Mondays. And that's been such a fun project in the sense of bringing first-time land buyers on there and just talking about the whole entire process. And I've gotten a lot of feedback in terms of like, wow, I was always curious how that worked. And so it's just kind of educating people in that process, bringing experts on there, because I've noticed the guy that's done 15 deals versus the guy that's done 2, you know, like shark and minnow.
Right.
and to break that down. So that's a super exciting project. And yeah, you can pretty much find everything on, if you go to one of the link trees at the end of our podcast, you can pretty much find everything you need to.
Awesome, brother. Well, hey, dude, I appreciate you coming on. Good luck to you here this October. I'll send you the picture of that buck bedding in that scrape. Yeah. And I know we'll stay in touch here during the course of the season, but I look forward to seeing what you got going on once you finally get into the timber.
Me too. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, brother. Thanks.
All right, folks, that is a wrap for today's show. I'd like to thank all of you for listening. And if you haven't yet, please head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and be sure to subscribe to the podcast. And while you're at it, head over to YouTube and give us a sub there too. I'd be super appreciative if you do those couple things for me. Before I shut this thing down, I need to give a big shout out to our partners who continue to help us make this podcast possible. Tethered, Spartan Forge, Exodus Outdoor Gear, Skull Brew Coffee Company, and Maven Optics. And until next time, we'll see y'all.
All right, gang, the new Truth merch is in stock at truthfromthestand.com and on YouTube below any of the Truth from the Stand videos. I've got some new hats, beanies, t-shirts, long sleeve t-shirts, and sweatshirts. There's even a new do hard shit hat for those of us who like to embrace microdosing adversity. So head to truthfromthestand.com and check out the new gear and use the code TRUTH, T-R-U-T-H, and save yourself some cash on the new gear.